So hi everybody, welcome along Tuesday morning, lovely beautiful day outside. Those of you online, welcome along to the course. You can see we're on death and rebirth, it's class 6. So let's begin as we normally do by setting our motivation and saying a few prayers together. So please just get comfortable in your seat first of all. So your back is straight, your shoulders are relaxed. You've got your hands and feet in a comfortable position. And you're going to let your body breathe itself. And feeling your body breathe itself, just relax into awareness. So you'll be aware of the body breathing itself. You'll be aware of the sounds you can hear and the different feelings you experience. I want you to just relax into that awareness. And you're feeling relaxed. Imagine that the ground beneath your feet is made of starry sapphire light, which is as soft as the palm of a baby's hand. And the space around you is filled with rainbows and offerings. And in the space in front of you, on a throne, sitting on cushions of lotus, sun and a moon, sits Buddha Shakyamuni. He is surrounded by an assembly of Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, deities and other enlightened beings. While you are surrounded by all sentient beings. You have your mother sitting beside you on your left and your father beside you on the right. Friends and family are sitting behind you. Difficult people are sitting in front of you, and strangers surround these four groups of people. But these strangers have all been related to us throughout countless lives as family members. And you recollect how fortunate you are to still be alive today. Because the causes of death are many, and the time of death uncertain. In being alive, you have the leisure and opportunity to attain any spiritual goal that you put your mind to. And though this is the case, it's important to act quickly. Quickly in relationship to the goal you have, because things are not quite right and this world does not exist as it seems to. Phenomena that are impermanent and subject to change appear as if they will not change. Phenomena which dependently arise appear as if they intrinsically exist, independent from your senses. The world does not exist in this way. But lucky for us, we have a spiritual friend who is leading us in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones. The teacher, Buddha, his teachings, the Dharma, and the spiritual community called the Sangha. So to make our offering of practice as purely as possible, I'd like you to imagine yourself to be as clear as a deity, and you're holding a vajra and a bell. And you're sitting within a sphere of great bliss. So surrounded by all sentient beings, you are within a sphere of great bliss, and the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas are in front of you and above you. Imagine putting your hands together in the prayer mudra and saying, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. In response to this prayer, lights and nectars pour from the heart of each enlightened being above you. And they stream down and dissolve into yourself and all living beings who surround you. And all negative karmas and obstructions are purified. They can have no negative effect upon you. Your health and lifespan are increased. Along with every good quality you have and your realizations of Dharma. You're cleansed by wisdom and love. You recollect four immeasurable thoughts. You decide to develop these yourself and to establish all beings into those four immeasurable vast states. You put your hands together again and you say, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectars stream down. And these dissolve into yourself and all living beings who surround you. Every negative karma and obstruction vanishes, purified under this flow of wisdom and love. And your health and lifespan are increased, along with your virtues and Dharma realizations. So you relax. And from that relaxed state of awareness appears the field for accumulating greater merit. So in front of them, you put your hands together and you say, reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. So having purified our body, speech, and mind somewhat and accumulated some merit, we don't want to cling to these great outcomes to be intrinsically existent. To stop that clinging, we imagine that our body, speech, mind, merit, and enjoyments are utterly transformed into the enjoyments of a Buddha world. And we offer this as a pure land to the Buddha, the Lama, and the spiritual entourage. So we say, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four photons, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field in Africa. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Gurakta Vedala Kamaya Chayami. So the offering has been made and released, and the Buddha accepts this offering and he smiles at us with delight. And we meet his gaze. So in the gaze of the Buddha, we recollect our wish to put an end to suffering and its causes. Our wish to develop the mind of enlightenment, seeking enlightenment for the benefit of others. And the correct view that all phenomena are empty of intrinsic existence and do exist dependently. In response to this recollection, from the heart of Buddha Shakyamuni, infinite light rays emanate, which are all environments and all beings. Everything dissolves into this light. And this light dissolves into the heart of the Buddha. Now the Buddha begins to diminish in size and moves through space to abide above the crown of your head. Now this Buddha, who is in nature, your own teacher, descends, enters the crown of your head, comes down to your heart, and the bare face of your innate mind, with a covering of the perception of true existence and perceiving it as true, vanishes completely. The mind and the mind of the Buddha become of one nature. Within this empty nature, you hear the resounding echoes of the mantra of Shakyamuni Buddha. And so you say, Tayatam Muni Mahamunaya Soha, Tayatam Muni Muni Mahamunaya Soha. So the complete path is established in your mind. The mind is the path of a single entity. And from your heart, rays of light fill the 10 directions of space. And every sentient being abiding within space is utterly transformed. This is a fully awakened state. Our purpose has been achieved, and the purpose of all sentient beings has also been achieved. And so the light now begins to withdraw from the 10 directions of space. It re-enters your heart. You can feel your own body breathing itself. You can hear the different sounds in the room and outside the room. And you know that this meditation is one of imagination. Even so, this imagination has imprinted the mind with the potential for full awakening. It's our job to nourish this potential, to realize each aspect of the path and to become actually fully awakened, to be able to really benefit sentient beings. I think this is what you're trying to do here by coming to these classes. You're listening. You want to put some of what you hear into practice to bring about enlightenment for yourself and all beings. And then I'm breathing in through your nostrils. Exhale through your mouth. And let your eyes flutter open and blink and move your body in whichever way you'd like to so you feel comfortable and at ease. So once again, hi everybody, welcome. I think we're on to class 6 today. So we've covered a bit of material. We began by looking at impermanence and worldly concern. We know there are two types of impermanence. One is called gross, which means you can obviously know what it is just using the senses. And gross impermanence primarily refers to death. Then there's also subtle impermanence. This is probably of greater importance, which means to the phenomena do not endure for a second moment beyond the time of its occurrence. If you think about that, try to imagine it in your mind, you're just really the only way we can get it through imagination and sort of thinking, because it's not available to our senses. It's like things are coming in and going out at the very same time. So like I said, helps me remember this is used to be a television program called Mission Impossible. Right? And on it, they had this wick that was burning. And it was sparking, and you knew, right, the light was coming like that, but the whole thing was going out. At the very same time it produces light, it's also going out. So it's like us, right? We're here, but we're also going out. And one day we will not be here, we'll have gone out. And so between now and then, we need to sort of value what we actually have this life and not waste it on what they call the eight worldly concerns. Meaning not being attached and averse to things like pleasure and pain and fame and infamy and so forth. These phenomena are also impermanent. Then we looked at the six methods of recollecting death and the faults of when we don't recollect our death. And probably the worst fault of all, when we forget about our own deaths, is the great regret that can arise at the moment of death itself. Like when we realize basically our life is coming to an end and sort of reevaluate what have we done with this life. So we can't look back and go, well, I lead it many meaningful. You know, I don't have any regrets about my life. Well, these so I've got a good death thing. So we do hope to die with a good death is what we should be aiming for. There's a way of doing this called the Nine Reasons Meditation. It's got like three roots, nine reasons and three conclusions. So the conclusions are basically, I have to practice Dharma. I have to practice it right now. And the Dharma we should practice should be pure, meaning it's got to be aimed for future rebirth, liberation or enlightenment. If it's not one of those goals, you'll know you're messing it up a bit. It's polluted with one of the eight worldly concerns. There are practices that we can do called the five forces at death. These forces were called the force of intention, which just means to remind yourself of what your goal is. You've lived this life with a purpose. Remind yourself what it is at the time of death. Power of familiarity, which in this case means that when you come to die, you know you're dying, you put yourself in the best posture for dying. But if you're lying down, you put your hand underneath and you block off one of the nostrils and you breathe through the other. But this is to stop the winds of anger arising. So we have intention, familiarity, the white seed. Again, the white seed is to have a virtuous mind. So you want to die with a positive, virtuous mind. Again, do your very best to not allow fear or grasping itself or self-cherishing to arise. You do not want a negative mind to arise at the time of death. So don't repudiate that. That's the fourth power. And finally, the power of aspiration. So this is what this is called, aspirational prayer. So you want to have this wish while you're dying. You know, may I continue with my path. May I become a Buddha. May I this whole process be one of positivity. And then there's the actual process of dying and death. So we talked about that, I think last time we spoke. It was talked about, you know, the different internal visions that you can experience and what that actually means. What's going on for us? What's collapsing? What's causing me to see mirages and feel like everything that the world's collapsing upon, all this sort of stuff. So you learn about it now so that when it actually takes place, you're not scared. You go, okay, I know about that, so I'm just starting. I need to apply the five forces. Now that material and the material today, I've been calling upon these books here. This material is very well covered in a book called Samsara, Nirvana and Buddha Nature. So what I particularly like about that is, like, if you look at the title, one is talking about the suffering we experience and its causes. Nirvana shows you how you can get out and what that experience is like. And Buddha nature shows you why that's really possible. It's just the nature of your mind. Because we have the mind, suffering can be put, an end of suffering can be brought about, and also the liberation called Nirvana. It's all dependent upon the mind. So all of us have a mind. This book here in the middle called The Physical World, sorry, this greenish one. So I'm going to rely a little bit on that today. This is a terrific book, but it's a bit, the way it's written, it's a bit scholarly. So if you don't like that dry sort of presentation, you might not like it so much. But the information is just tremendous. So today and next week, it's primary is that book. So today we're going to be looking at the role of karma, and in particular, it's how it determines the realm of rebirth. I think it's it's next week we'll be talking about all these different realms. Right? But this today, just like the role of karma in process, and then how rebirth actually takes place. So this process of how we come into a samsaric rebirth and the means of freeing ourselves from it. So here we have samsara and nirvana. This can all be seen in this picture. It's called the Wheel of Existence. It was given as a gift to a king by another king, on the recommendation of the Buddha. So it won't be too clear to you, but I'll just point out what's in there. So at the very center there is a pig, a pigeon or a rooster, and a snake. Sometimes these animals, the tail of the pig will be in the mouth of one of the other animals, and the tail of the snake will be in the mouth of another animal and the last feather. So they're all hooked up together. But sometimes it's like that. And sometimes the tail of the snake and the feathers of the pigeon are in the mouth of the pig. So you go, so what's all this mean? So what they're pointing out here is you've got these three afflictive emotions. There's ignorance, symbolized by the pig, attachment by the pigeon, and hatred by the snake. And so we've got hatred, desirous attachment, and ignorance. And when the tail of hatred and the tail of attachment are in the mouth of the pig, it's symbolizing all afflictive emotions are rooted in ignorance. This is what the middle shows you. And so this is this interaction between ignorance and these afflictive emotions that cause what we call samsara. Outside that little inner circle, there's another circle you can see where one side is sort of black or dark and the other is white. And if you look at it, on the black side there's a whole lot of people sort of falling downwards, and on the white side there's a lot of people going upwards. So this is showing you the actions that produce suffering or happiness within this whole cycle. So the black side represents a non-virtuous activity, non-virtuous karma. The white side shows you virtuous karma, skillful actions that lead to greater happiness. The next ring shows you all the lives and experiences that take place within what we call this cycle of existence. So one of them is the human realm, and this is where we are. There's another one in there that shows the realm of the animals. So we all can see animals, we know they exist, we know they're not humans. That's what they've got, humans and animals. Then there are a number of others that we're not really familiar with. Those, they are called hungry ghosts or predators. There are beings in the different hells, which are hot hells, cold hells, intermediate hells, and so forth. And then there are other beings called gods or devas. And sometimes in this middle, they have five realms, which are described, and sometimes it's six. When it's six, there are what they call the gods that are always warring. And then they have the gods that are not. So this is different types of way you live within psychic existence. And then on the outside, you've got these 12 little things inside that. They're called the 12 links of dependency. And they basically show you how the whole process works and can how you produce samsara or psychic existence, or how you can undo it. So both are in there. How the suffering is produced, how you can get out of the suffering. The big sort of demon holding it all with five skulls on his head and this big red, sometimes it's red, sometimes it's blue. Two ways you can look at it, it's gonna be like death itself, and it's all held within the grip of death. Whatever's going on there, death is always present. None of it is stable. So it also represents impermanence. In fact, I remember a story of his holiness saying that he didn't want it like that, he wanted it as a skeleton. As he had the picture drawn up with a skeleton holding it. He says, look, to remind you, it's all impermanent, it's all subject to change. And in fact, it's all subject to that really subtle change I was telling you about. Comes in one moment and it's going out at the very same time. It's all subject to that. Then outside it, you'll see on the right-hand side, when you look at it, there's a monk. The sort of hand is stretched out of it. So that represents the Buddha. So he's saying, I am the teacher and this is my teaching. And my teaching leads you. You see, on the other side, there's a moon with a rabbit in it. And the moon represents like freedom, cessation, the true cessation of suffering, nirvana. And so they're outside this thing. Now, along with that, I'll just say, do we have a fragrance in here? We don't. But often in this picture, or underneath this, the 12 links, is often a little saying there. And the saying is, practicing this and abandoning that, enter into the teaching of the Buddha. So I've often said this is a really good way to think about it. You just adopt some things and you abandon other things. You adopt what works and you put away what doesn't work. It's as simple as that. But the tricky thing is you've got to find out what works and what doesn't. So of course we can use our own experience to do this, and this is what the Buddha encourages us. But it's, in fact, it's probably smarter to actually see what it's got to say and then check it back. You can check your own experience and go, is this correct what he's saying? So first of all, practicing this and abandoning that, enter into the teaching of the Buddha. Like an elephant in a thatched house, destroy the forces of the Lord of Death. So the forces of the Lord of Death are those three animals in the middle: ignorance, hatred, and lust. They are the forces of what we call death. They bring an end to this life, and you have another one and another and another, and it just keeps on going. So then he says, those with thorough conscientiousness practice this disciplinary doctrine. They will forsake the wheel of birth, bringing dukkha to an end. So I can see this picture shows you how we enter into cyclic existence, but also how you get out. And it was given by one king to another king as a present, on the recommendation of the Buddha. Now, as I said, this is often called the wheel of life, but it's also called the wheel of dependent origination, because everything is dependent upon something else. In fact, that's how everything exists. So you can see here that hatred is dependent upon ignorance. Lust is dependent upon ignorance. All suffering comes back to ignorance. It's dependent upon ignorance. You go, so what is this ignorance? It's just a misapprehension of who we are and how things exist. It just minds us wrong, that's all. So the lovely thing about for me is hearing that you go, oh, something is wrong, can it be put right? And the answer is yeah, it can. So the answer to the ignorance is wisdom. We've got to apply our intelligence, deep intelligence, and look at this phenomenon ourselves and go, do I actually exist in the way I appear to myself? Does everything that appears to my senses, does it exist in the way it's appearing to me? This is a deep question we need to ask ourselves. And if we do, we will find it doesn't exist that way. It's strange. But I think all of us have had some sort of intuition that it might be like this. So our job is to find out whether it's the case or not. And if we do, then we can go into this teaching with great conviction. You know, we know, okay, I do need to stop doing this. I do need to adopt that. I can do it with a lot of confidence. So this is the freedom and its path. The Buddha represents the path, and the moon represents the actual freedom.
Why is there a rabbit in the moon, Eddie?
This is a Tibetan tradition. When we look at that, it's like the man in the moon.
Yeah.
And so when they look up at the moon, it's got the craters and things look like it. Yeah. It's a rabbit. So Nagarjuna, one of the greatest, often called the second Buddha, a terrific, great philosopher, said, the root of samsara is karmic action. Therefore, the wise do not perform it. Therefore, the ones who commit karmic acts are the unwise, not the wise, because they see the precise nature. Now, this does not mean we should not perform good karmic actions. And it does not mean that bodhisattvas do not commit karma, because they do. So this is here saying negative karmic actions. This is what they're getting at. There are all sorts of actions. He's saying the root of samsara is creating actions that are rooted in ignorance. So the wise don't do that. The karmic actions rooted in ignorance propel the cycle of existence. So you can think of this like a You might have seen pictures of water wheels. I don't think they're really common anymore, but you sort of know how they work, don't you? Sometimes they've got like a windmill that will drive the water, the wheel goes round and round, and as it goes round, it's got these buckets on it, and it'll often pick up water and it puts the water somewhere else, you know, and it goes around like that. Or it can drive a big wheel to grind wheat and make flour. But that wheel is this way of energy. So if you can think of a water wheel that's turning because a stream flows into it. That's what it does. The water comes in and it propels it and it starts moving. And it gathers up the water. So our karmic actions are like that stream. We have a mind and it's active. And so that's called activity. And this activity is not neutral. Often it's tempered with our emotions, often it drives even more so. So this activity continuously creates this momentum. And that's our lives, basically. You know, many of you will say, if you think about it, like when you go to bed at night sometimes, and you know, you think, I can't stop thinking. Like you stop drinking coffee, right? And the mind starts getting it. Well, that's it. That's samsara at play. We're not saying, oh, keep on moving, mind. Oh, I really appreciate this. No, we don't. Right? It just doesn't. It's got its own momentum. And so a lot of this, what they call habitual driven behavior. That's karma, one of the aspects of it. And that's what our life is like. Now, karma, in terms of these 12 links, has two aspects. Does anybody know what the numbers of those links are in the names?
Okay. It's the, I want to say the first
one's ignorance, but that is karma. We're after karma. Links. Yeah, within the 12 links, we've got two links associated with karma. Does anybody remember what the numbers of the links are in the names? Somebody might know online, okay?
But what would
it? Yeah, so number two is formative action. So number three is consciousness. Right? So number one is ignorance. There we have karmic formations, just like in the wheel, right? Right in the middle, the piggy, ignorance. Right around it, drive the wheel, karmic formation. So this is link two, but there's another link associated with karma. Really important. We've got this action, the intended action. It's got to bring about a consequence. But that's called karma too. Can anybody remember what the name of that link is and what its number is? I will come to it.
Becoming?
Yes, becoming is its name. That's how it's called, becoming, and it's link number 10. It goes becoming, then it gets birth, right? Because this is what I'm saying. It's really important to remember how to die with a positive mind. Because that number 10, that's it. The becoming. You're going to become something dependent upon that last thought. Right? And you don't want that to be negative, because that's going to lead into the birth state. And you'll take a body that's suitable for that thought. And then aging and death will take place. So, link two is called formative actions. And it's also known as karma, or compositional action. And as it's called composition, as you can see, because actions serve to compose or bring together. So what they bring together is experience. Their activities create experiences. Their mental activities create experiences. One of those experiences is going to be, well, you can, there's a number of them. One is consistent behavior. Another is rebirth state. And this is what's important here, the 12 links, we just talk about the rebirth that the karma can drive. Another is that you can experience something very similar to what you've done. So these are all outcomes of karma. So your behavior is very similar, this karma, your behavior is the same. You experience something very similar to what you've done before. And unless you can have this rebirth state. So it's these actions that are done. So this karma, a form of action, is called, it's an intentional deed. You've intended to do it. If the four parts are in place that make up a complete action are in place, like you do it, you completely do it, you know you've done it, it's good, right? Then there's going to be an outcome for that. And that outcome has got enough power in it, if the activity was powerful and strong enough, to bring about a rebirth. So it's not the case that every action that you do, which is complete, has the power to bring about a rebirth. That's not the case. It has to have a certain weight and strength to it. And so, at the time of death, believe me, if you start freaking out, that's got some strength, right? So you don't want to be like that. You will try, it's what's so important to practice while we're alive now. Try and become used to, which is karma, becoming used to, a type of thinking, a type of behavior, mental behavior. So we always think like this. So I said the other, a couple of days, maybe a week or so ago, on Thursday nights I do a mindfulness class. And in that class, the meditation we did was to remember to think kindly of other sentient beings. So in other words, if you're sitting around anywhere, you said, oh, may beings be happy, may all beings be happy. You just think that. And if you ask them, like, why am I thinking that? There's got to be a good reason for it, right? What's the reason for thinking that you wish that all beings should be happy? Well, that's the effect.
Yeah.
Simply because people want to be happy. People want to be happy.
No suffering.
That's the next one. You can wish, may they have no suffering. Right? So when you say, may they be happy, that's love. And present, it's so simple because everyone wants to be happy. When you say, may they all be free of suffering, you go, why are you thinking that? The answer to you should be so obvious because everyone wants to be free of suffering. It's not rocket science. You just bring down the most basic and go, like, is this true? If it's true for you, you're going to go, dude, that's true for everyone. This is a reasonable thought to have. It makes sense. So instead of sitting there thinking about nothing or just letting your mind regurgitate its rubbish, why not just sit there and look at people and go, you know, whenever I say it, may somebody be happy. That's love. I'm creating a mind of love. Every great book you'll read will be talking about how great love is. Right? And most of us like are waiting for it. But we think, oh, somebody else is going to love me and I'm going to feel great. It's going to come out at me and then I'll be great. But this goes completely against the way of Dharma. Dharma is that you have to create it. The mind is the creator. We're looking inwards, not outwards. So I hope by me saying this to you, like lots of guys that go, oh my God, if I just think this, I'm becoming a loving person. I'm turning my mind into an entity of love. If I just keep thinking, maybe free of suffering, which is what we want. You know, I'm creating compassion. That's how you do it. This is really simple. So look, please, like, do the simple. Because if you can't do the simple or won't do the simple, it's going to be very hard to do many, many more difficult practices. Well, the first thing is, so the Buddha's a realist, right? So taking that view, so that's not realism. This we're imagining something that's a world we're different than what it was. So this is the so when you talk about the world, you're talking about you're not talking about yourself, are you? You're not talking about your mind, you're talking about something different.
I'm talking about the external elements.
Yeah, that's right. So forget about it. Like that's I mean, yeah, sure you can think all that. Is it any different? Does it make any difference for you to think that? None whatsoever. The world is as it is. And you know, so yeah, so no, the thing is, we've got to empower. Like I said, the world is not separate from mind. Mind creates the world. There's no world separate from the mind. If there were, you wouldn't be able to know it. And so the mind, the world is dependent upon mind. So then it's like, think about it. Anytime you think about how terrible the world is, who is affected by it? Yeah, the world is not. The world doesn't give a damn. We're just there. We feel terrible. You can change that. Change the way you think. The world will be at, like, it's not, you know. You think that way, the world appears different. So you've got to, this is a thing. You can think all sorts of things, and we have been for a long, long time. And again, I just want to come back to the root of all of this. So it comes from the Buddha's words. He said, "Look, I just teach suffering and how to put an end to it." So it's up to you what you want to think and how you want to think, what you want to think about. But at the end of the day, you will always want to be happy. And you will always not wish to be experiencing suffering, no matter all the rest of it, yeah. Yeah, but this is our ground zero. In fact, I remember just before I when Miffy and I were not partners, and you know, she had her sewing business, and she's an artist, right? And we were sitting outside talking, and she had this thing like, do I continue with my art or do I start running the center? So then I told her about this story from the Buddha that really, really helped me. And it's about, he's walking in the forest and his monks are with him. And one of his monks starts asking him a question, very, very much like what you just did, Camille, right? So the Buddha, he reaches down and he picks up a handful of leaves. And he said to the monk, tell me, are there more leaves in my hand or in the forest that surrounds us? And the monk goes, well, obviously there's more leaves on the trees that surround us than there are in your hand. And he goes, so it is with the objects of knowledge. My teachings are as small as these leaves are holding my hand. They are suffering and the ending of suffering. And all the stuff on the trees are all the things you can think about and get involved in. So this is what I would present with you. It's like, yeah, you can follow art. You can do all sorts of things you want to do. But I see, if you're an artist, you will want to be happy. You will never want to experience suffering. And when you're not happy, you will want to be happy. And when you are suffering, you'll want to put an end to it. And you may not know how to. So for me, it's like, look. Get to this stuff first. You can do all the other stuff. You can still be an artist. But why not learn to be happy as well? Why not learn how to diminish your suffering? We can all be housewives, husbands, whatever we are that's what we're doing. But the most important thing for us is like, how do I put an end to my suffering? How do I increase my happiness? How can I help others do the same? That should be the number one thing. Everything else you can go out from it and do it. Now, the link number 10 is called existence or renewed existence. And this is, like I said here, it's called the karmic force that leads to rebirth in that particular state. So we've created an action. This action has some potential to create something else, right? That potential needs to be conditioned. The things that created the condition are links. 8 and 9, or clinging and craving and clinging. And they arise from feeling. So imagine that we've created an action, we've created many actions. Now we're lying in a hospital bed and we are dying. Then suppose a nurse was coming in and then they dropped their instruments and that makes this big clanging noise. And we're lying there, we hear it, and we don't like it. So the noise came out, this is called, so we have our sense bases pick up this noise because we've made contact with it, right? In defense upon the hearing it, feelings arise. What type of feeling? So we just say, well, a feeling, I don't like it. Then the craving and the clinging got to be either separated from it or that it should stop. And that grabs hold of this previous action. So our action is now the link 10. They come together, and if we die then, we're in trouble. So, you know, we try to be reasonable. I always suggest this to all of you. Be as honest as you possibly can with yourselves. So that you can do what you actually can do. So you know, as we talk up, there's a lot of philosophy, a lot of things to learn, but there's always an encouragement to meditate or become familiar with what you're learning about. The goal is if you can become familiar with it, you can do it. You will do it. So what might you do if you were familiar with just wishing everyone to be happy? When that nurse dropped her instruments and made the noise, you would understand really quickly that nurse might be a bit upset herself about dropping this stuff, right? And you might think, may you be happy. Because that's what you're used to thinking. You're always thinking this. But so you can lie there, and every time the nurse has come to help you, your thing is always, oh, wow, thank you, may you be happy. You see anybody that comes in that room to serve someone else, may you be happy. It should be your driving, you know, simple mental state. And it says rooted in the knowledge, you know that everyone wants to be happy. You yourself want to be happy. So don't wait for somebody to make you happy, create it. Like I said, when I realized, oh my God, that is love from a Buddhist perspective, a wish that others be happy. Oh my God, that's easy. Wow, I never knew that.
Some of them are completely pleasant no matter what's happening to them, and others are in this paranoia and fear and nothing's happening to them. You're not even doing anything. But the moment you approach them, you can feel anxiety and you can kind of go, wow, this is what you've practiced your life. So
yeah. So again, this is what we call karma here. This is, you know, what are you habituating yourself to? If it's the wish that everybody be happy, you're habituating your mind to loving kindness. If you're habituating your mind that others and yourself be free from suffering, you're habituating the mind to compassion. That's meditation. That is the meditation. You are meditating. You are familiarizing the mind with something that you already know. That's the mindfulness aspect. You are cultivating a new property of mind. That's meditation. May you be happy. May you be free from suffering. If you get the little logic behind it, you can make sense to you. This will actually be a no-brainer to you afterwards. I like it simple. Now, so we have these true origins, and we have true sufferings. So the true origins, as you can see here, we've got ignorance, clinging, and craving, links 1, 8, and 9. Then we have karma, 2 and 10. So these are the true origins of suffering. When you look at the Four Noble Truths, I talk about true sufferings, that's the first noble truth. True origins is the second noble truth. So you can see just two truths of the noble beings in the 12 links, right? And the rest is a massive suffering. This is the first noble truth. So the thing is, the interesting thing, when you look at all this, there's no real, there's nothing called a person in there that's separate from all this. So the karma is steering our minds towards a new life. So we become the heir to our actions. Just like in this life. If you do something, people hold you responsible for it. Because we did it. So what we do now has an impact on our future, like as we know, right? In this life. But if you just extend it, you go, well, that's all called life, right? There's just a whole lot of it in it. You get what you give. What you do, you get it back.
Maybe I'll talk for later, but.
There are desires that are unskillful in presentation, and there are desires that are skillful. So it's not the case that all desire is a negative thing. Not at all. So a desire for nirvana, or a desire for liberation, or a desire for Buddhahood are great desires. That's what you want to desire. Where it can get sticky and messy is when you misapprehend how desire exists or your goals exist. That's where we often make the mistakes. And so we've got two things in Buddha Dhamma. One thing is the things that exist, like desire, Buddhahood, Nirvana, they're phenomena that do exist. Again, what really Buddha is really dealing with is like, yeah, but how do they exist? Because it's the misapprehension of that that's the problem. We have ignorance then. When we misapprehend how we exist, how nirvana exists, that's problematic. But because then we're going to be desiring things that actually don't exist. Not in that way. So that's what we call ignorance again. So desire itself is not a problem. Yeah. Again, from Nagarjuna, he says, with these three phases, naturally causing each other. So these three phases here are the afflictive emotions, the karma, and the outcome. True origins, true sufferings. These things, like I said, they interact with each other. They're causally related. Psychic existence whirls around like the circle formed by a whirling torch, without beginning, middle, or end. Now, this is a really great quote when you can unpack it. Right? So, and it relates to, like Camille, to what you just said, right? So when you see a circle of fire, right, it looks like a complete circle of fire, doesn't it? But in fact, it may not be. It might be just one torch whirled around really quickly to give the impression that there's a real ring of fire. If you believe there's a real ring of fire, when in fact there's only one torch brand there being whirled around, you've made a big mistake. And this is what they're saying. So samsara is a mistake. Samsara is, nirvana appearing real. But in fact, if you just break down what samsara is, you end up with nirvana.
there is much confusion between the two.
Yeah, that's right. When the two are seen as separate, that's confusion. That's a big mistake. They're not. So for many years, this mistake was made by many, many Buddhists, not by the Buddha, of course, and many of his really skillful students attained nirvana, because they could see, oh my God, samsara is just a misapprehension. If I can see through that, I'll actually see it's not the way it is. Yeah. So it's very hard to see, isn't it? When you see like a ring of fire like that, well, none of us can see. It's just one single brand being whirled around really quickly. None of us see that, do we? We see one solid ring of fire. Just like when we watch television, all the pictures are really up there, aren't they? Except they're not, are they? Each one's just one little tiny little thing. And even that doesn't have the color. It requires three other lenses to produce one pixel of color. But that doesn't appear to us, right? Just the picture does. So again, we have this phenomenon where phenomena appear to be true when in fact they're not. There's a discrepancy between the appearance and the reality, the appearance and how they exist. For many of us, in terms of karma, it appears to us like, for instance, that if I stole something from somebody, I'd be rich. But in fact, the Dharma tells us that if you take something from somebody, something is taken from you. You lose. You're setting yourself up for a loss. But the appearances are rich. Right? So there's all these sort of things that over time, sort of hopefully, will settle in your mind and your behavior will change. So there's a lot of interesting stuff. So let's do our first meditation. Please just get comfortable in the seat. Now drop your shoulders. Exhale. Let's release all the tension. When you inhale, try to imagine you're breathing in really good clear energy and the mind is clearing. Now within your mind, there are a flow of intentions that lead to actions. These actions leave imprints in your consciousness. The karma is the process where our intentional actions, be they either wise or ignorant, these will create future experiences. Actions which are rooted in ignorance. Ignorant actions strengthen the causes that keep us bound to suffering and rebirth. So imagine that water wheel turning because a stream flows into it. Our karmic actions are like that stream. They continuously feed the wheel of samsara. So how might remembering dependent arising transform your actions? When you acknowledge dependent arising, you're recognizing that actions and their consequences are without inherent existence. They have no true existence. And this helps us act from wisdom rather than grasping. So I wonder what intentions arise most frequently in your own mind. It's by observing your intentions that you can transform them before they become karmic actions. It's like asking yourself, why am I going to do this? What's the consequence of doing that? And then deciding to act. This is how you can apply the understanding to current challenges. If you respond with patience to something difficult, you plant the seed or the potential for future peace and freedom. So before acting on something today, just pause and check if your intentions will lead you to freedom or some sort of entanglement. And by doing this, may your understanding of karma help you create causes for your own liberation and the liberation of all beings. And now, again, just breathing in now through your nostrils. Exhale through your mouth. Let your eyes flutter open. Now, here again, this new quote by Nagarjuna. So, there are a lot of quotes from Nagarjuna today. This one's from The Precious Garland. He says, as long as one grasps the aggregates, one will also grasp the I with regard to them. If one grasps the I, karma will be created again. And due to that karma, one will again be reborn. So what he's getting at here is this first line, as long as one grasps the aggregates. So the aggregates are our body and mind. As long as you believe that your body and mind are you, that's what's called grasping it, I. You grasp at the aggregates, you also grasp at oneself. I mean, this is me. As soon as you do that, karma gets created. That is an activity. It's rooted in ignorance because you're not your body and mind. But yet you're acting as if you are. So I hope you can sort of see there, like how many activities we engage in that are completely rooted in ignorance, even if they're good activities, right? We grasp it ourselves to be good people. Or we can be good people, but the grasping, you don't need to grasp it yourself to do that. But if you were to, you create karma. What type of karma would it be in this case? Yeah, virtuous karma, good karma, right? We want to be good people, so we act well, we act good. But we create good karma that keeps us in cyclic existence. It doesn't get us out, right? We still experience suffering, even though we're good people. You might have read that title, Why Do Good People Experience Bad Things? Just like us, right? Not the good people, but a lot of terrible things can happen. Stay in cyclic existence. The grasp of the aggregates, our body and mind, fuels a sense of I. And then I experience karma, I experience rebirth, then you will.
Uh-huh.
Well, it depends. No. You have to ask, am I grasping with my I? So when you say, I do that, or I'm going to the toilet, there's no grasping there, you're using the I quite sensibly. I doesn't exist, do you miss your children? I am going to the toilet. There's nothing mistaken about that. No, doesn't need to be any grasp on that. Well, it's not. It depends. You see, because if you sit there and you start to really want to go to the toilet, then that grasp will definitely take place. And you'll definitely think, like, I am my body. You know, like, my body actually needs to go, but I'll think, I have to go, I have to go. But now there's grasping. But that's very different than just saying, excuse me, I need to go to the toilet. It depends on intention and your awareness. So everything I said. Sorry?
On the intensity?
Yeah. Especially intensity. That's what I call the weight of karma, the strength of it. Yeah. As you probably know, we've got some books upstairs. One of them is a Geshe Sofa book called Steps on the Path to Enlightenment, where he explains karma. So that's one whole book, one whole volume, just on karma. And it's not in there, I know that, because I've read the book. Yeah, let's have a look at this karma thing here, right? So these are called the projected causes. What they're going to project is a rebirth. Right? So out of ignorance, an activity follows. That activity finishes, its potential is on your mind. This is really easy to check. Just check the behavior that you do often or not. You know, you intend to do the activity and you do it. And so now, you know you've done it. This can be good, bad, right? If you didn't know, then you'd say, I've got no memory of it whatsoever. So we all have a memory. We know we've done it. So then we have this cause. We've created a cause. But then you have what they call what's going to actualize that cause, what's going to make it produce the effect. Craving, clinging. So this, of course, this is really about the rebirth, but I'm going to move it away to just the ordinary behavior. So the example I've used about going to the loo. So I've gone to the loo plenty of times. We all have these activities. We know when we need to go. We know we intend we want to go. Okay. But then suppose I'm prevented. Well, then the craving, the clinging start kicking in, right? Greater sense of an I. It's not just just one moment. It's like, no, like, I've got to go. I tell you, I've got to go. Yeah. Now we're craving, clean, grasping onto, holding onto the body. Yeah. So it's going to produce an effect. Yeah. One of those effects might be that if you stop me going, I'm going to start getting upset. Camille.
I was just going to say that the opposite to that is the hunger.
Yeah, you can choose anything. And you can go along and take it. It don't really matter. It could be all sorts of events here, like whether it be going for food or going to the loo or anything. But if you take that further, go across to a rebirth, don't think, okay, so I've created actions in the past. You're lying to me, you're thinking this activity. Something happens back in this other one here. Where contact with the senses is made on an object, the feeling arises, then the craving and so forth, it's going to produce an effect. This is like this number 10. Something's going to come up here. It's just on the cusp. What you can say with certainty is that the craving for the food is diminishing.
Yes.
In fact, this is a lovely story and put it on Facebook. So, for instance, this man, a man escapes from a concentration camp. The Nazis say, right, 10 people have to die. So they pull out 10 people, and one of the 10 people goes, he's begging for his life. You know? They say, like, I've got a family, and one of these things, Nazis don't care, right? This other bloke goes, excuse me, officer, how about I die instead of him? Why don't you take my life instead of this fellow? And the guy goes, yeah, I don't care. Like, chuck him out, you go in and die. So they go and so now how are they going to be killed? Well, they're not going to be just executed. They're going to starve them to death. So they put them in this room and leave them in there till they all die of hunger. So in this thing, so this guy, he's already giving away his food to other prisoners. So they're starving to death in this place. He's nurturing them, he's singing to them, he's praying for them. They all die. He's one of the last people left, right? Still trying to nurture the dying. So this to me shows you like this, what you're just talking about. Right? This guy, of course, is a great, he's been canonized now, but at that time he was a priest. Right? And he had this great faith. Of course, his thing is not just about the hunger. His goes not beyond. So you can say it's a non-attachment to hunger, no craving for food, sorry. So you can have hunger, but it doesn't really affect them. And this is it's the craving and clinging. That's what I keep saying. This is the problem. It's not the objects. They don't have to be, for most ordinary people, it's the object, but they're wrong. So this way I've drawn this is up is about how rebirth takes place over two or three lives. And so sometimes if the karma is strong enough, at the moment of death takes longer, that last one, that's the one that'll produce the rebirth. But sometimes it's something that's taking place in some other lifetime, that's what comes up. Craig, you cling to that and a rebirth takes place. The karma plays a central role in connecting past and present lifetimes. The Buddha explained that possessed of their own karma, beings are heirs to karma. So again, trying to think of this as simple. I'll give you an example. Suppose 10 years ago, I stole somebody's money. So that's an activity. And I got their money. And then next year, that person finds me. So I created the activity. I am here. I am the one who did it. And now it's 11 years later, and now they want me to pay for it. And I have to pay for it. That's how it works in one life. All you've got to do is go, well, why would that work in another life? It's the same process. It's just life, it's just the time span that's expanded. Yeah. But most of us, we think, oh, we can get away with it, right? I took the while. I thought I'd get away with it. I didn't think I was going to meet him again 11 years later. And by taking that money, I'd be happy. That's why I took it. I didn't think I was going to take it and suffer the consequences. So it's the same thing. You just rip it across larger time spans. So it's like what works now, it works later. This is how karma works, cause and effect. It depends. It could be the same or it could be someone different, even in different other lives. Yeah. So when you say same and different, it won't be Ruby I meet in some other life. What you'd call the same thing is the mental continuum. So this is like general, right? It's not exactly the same, it's changing all the time. So the name relates to your mind and the form is to your body. So again, there's a lot of material. We just have to put it aside. I'm slow, we're talking too much. Okay, just need this meditation. Again, just get comfortable. So here we're talking about karma and rebirth. So we want to understand about life and its continuity, and not just for ourselves, but to help others understand possibility of freedom. So you need to be curious and compassionate about this. Curious and compassionate. So the process of rebirth over two lifetimes begins with ignorance. We misapprehend reality. We cling to the five aggregates to be truly me, truly I. So we're clinging to the body, our feelings, our perceptions, our mental formations, our consciousness to be me. And this grasping triggers intentions and actions, which plant karmic seeds in the mindstream. At death, craving and clinging energize these seeds. They propel consciousness into a new life where the aggregates reassemble, shaped by past causes and new conditions. So rebirth is like a river flowing between landscapes. The water in the second valley is not identical to the first. Yet it carries minerals and momentum from upstream. Continuity without sameness. So what habits or intentions are you carrying forward? And just notice how clinging to a sense of I, clinging to a sense of me, will shape your choices. Just as the river's course is shaped by the banks. So in terms of rebirth, nothing truly transfers. So if nothing truly transfers, what continues? It's the process. There is no thing, it's a process. This is what continues. So, breathing in, exhale. So I remember when I discovered this myself, and I really told me his mother, you know, and it's sort of, I was kind of like, oh my God, like it's all process. There's nothing that you can hold to in it. And she was sort of really shocked. Don't say that. Oh, I don't know if I'm wrong or not, but it is a little shocking when you think about it, you know? And the process is just given names. And as soon as you give it a name, then it all becomes solid and real again. That's just how it works. This is an explicit meditation on three lifetimes. So in a past life, so the life before this one, right? We were still ignorant then. We still misapprehended ourselves in reality. We created actions that put on the consciousness. Then we have the soul. We have a name and form. Well, Ruby, you've got a body and a mind. That's the name and form. We have eyes, ears, nose, tongue. They make contact with objects of the eyes. Visual stimuli, auditory stimuli, oral stimuli. And feelings arise when you make contact with these stimuli. And a craving to be separated from them or to have them takes place. Because you always misapprehend the stimuli and you misapprehend you. You want to get away with it or you want to possess it. And as soon as you do that, a new thing starts to take place. You create something new. And and then we have birth and death again. So here we are in this life. We've got this life, it is existence, but we're creating causes for our next life. At the end of this life, a new one comes. Yeah. Well, just don't talk about it like that. If you were to, the idea would be the purpose of a sentient being. So here's not a thing called life. But the purpose of a sentient being that is living, the purpose of it is to free themselves from suffering. That's what the Buddha says. Well, our teaching is what causes you suffering and what doesn't. So the purpose of your life, if you choose to make it that. So again, no inherent purpose. But you have to decide. The purpose, that is, you give your life purpose, you give it meaning. You have to decide what you want to do.
What it leads to is
if you don't understand how it works, it leads you to more suffering. It leads you to continued existence. Mm-hmm. If you do understand and are able to put effort into freeing yourself, it could lead to freedom.
So that means
dying. No, there is a way out. That's what I'm saying. If there was no way out, why bother teaching you about it?
But once you're out,
yeah,
then what?
Then you teach others how to get out. So, again from Nagarjuna, when nourished by grasping, future existence fully matures. Without grasping, there is freedom from further existence. So again, this is what shows you, yep, there's the cycle we're in, but there's a way out. What's the way out? Don't grasp. How do you stop grasping? Understand that the phenomenon you grasp it doesn't truly exist. It doesn't exist the way you think it does. Neither do we. The grasper, what's grasped, doesn't exist the way it's appearing.
I have a bit of a problem with this.
Well, we'll stop there, Kat. But look, it's right in front of your eyes. Yeah? Look around you. All this phenomena around us is impermanent, unstable. Does it appear that way? Honestly. I'm just staying the same. Does it look like we're all staying the same? Anybody see a brick change? But there's a discrepancy. Yeah? It's all changing, but that's not how it appears to us. It's right there. Now, so there's the appearance. Now you've got to bring like, now the other part comes in your mind. Are you assenting to that? Do you agree? Like, is your mind just leaving it alone? I say, of course it is. It takes a lot of effort to have a look at this and start questioning it. Very few people do. But those that do, we call them scientists, botanists. All these guys are investigating the reality. Do many people do that? No. Many people just leave it alone and go, now this is the world I live in. It exists in the way it appears to me. Again, it was really straightforward. If a doctor, suppose you're a doctor, right? The Buddha was seen as a great doctor, a great physician. You come to him with a problem. Does this doctor have the problem? No. Can he tell you what to do to get out of this problem? Yeah. Same here, right? We're going to become the doctors. We're going to work out what causes us slow suffering. We're going to stop it. Then someone else is going to come in and go, I'm suffering, doc. We go, no problem. I can help you. There you go. Just like that. That's the goal for the Buddhist tradition. Mahayana perspective is we have all got to become physicians. We've got to learn how to help ourselves, free ourselves from all the causes of our suffering, and help everyone else who's not.
That's within this life.
No, within all lives. Life is like, no, there's no ending here. The only ending is the suffering. Anyway, it's interesting. Last meditation. Okay, so you're comfortable, your eyes are closed, you're relaxed, and you're breathing. And you can recall your actions now can plant seeds that can ripen later. As they do in this life, you plant a seed, it doesn't sprout straight away, it takes time. So our actions that we do now can ripen in the future. So just as our past actions have shaped our current state, our present choices shape our future. Suffering arises from causes that we ourselves have set in motion. Rebirth between lifetimes is like that river flowing between the landscapes. The water is the consciousness. It reaches the second valley. It's not identical to what flowed from the first valley. It carries dissolved minerals, temperature patterns, and momentum from upstream. It carries our behaviors, what we've done. This river, like consciousness, maintains a continuity without sameness. It's shaped by its previous journey while it adapts to the new terrain. So if you actually understood this continuity between lifetimes, would this change your perspective on your current lifetime? Like a river carrying elements downstream, our actions create patterns that continue beyond this life. So what patterns from your own past do you sense flowing into your present experience? Just as a river adapts to new terrain while maintaining its essential nature, consciousness evolves while preserving its continuity. And how could you use this understanding to cultivate more compassion for beings caught within this flow? We need to remember that, like the journey of the river, the consciousness of each being carries the imprints of countless previous experiences. So if you can, try to commit to being mindful. Remember actions that benefit beings. Remember activities that are beneficial to yourself and others. At the same time, don't cling to them. Just let them play out. Become like a witness to this ever-changing current. Now breathe in through your nostrils and exhale. Yeah, so when I just said that last line to you, the thing that arose in my mind as an image was when people drown or when you drown, the thrashing around that people do, like they're trying to grab, to hold something and keep them up. All they have to do is relax and they float. So the grasping is like that. You grasp, you drown. You relax. that's a natural. So you see this a lot in Buddhist prisoners, it's like to relax. Relax the mind. That stops you grasping at appearances, especially your own inner appearances. Okay, so hope you did know this. So we know that that's confusing enough just to live an ordinary life. It could get worse at the time of death. We need to make sure it doesn't. like I said, your mind is often active. If you could just calm it down, that helps a great deal. Yeah, so your responses are critical. The future is in your own hands. Notices. So I forgot that. I don't know what the pages are up there. There's probably not much there. So we're going to continue this next week. And here we'll talk about all these different realms. So no doubt you'll have a lot of questions about that, Camille.
It's always a pleasure to have a chat with you.
And how these are attained, because they're quite surprising. They've not been for sure, or you've been coming a long time, it might not surprise you. But it's a little strange to think of how you can create these rebirths that's in the slide. Because none of it's separate from the mind. Yeah, that's the thing. I think one of the most difficult things for us is to just stop this idea that the mind is going to stop when we're dead. This is a rooted base. You're thinking, well, for sure. It comes to me, the brain stops, you're going to stop thinking. But that doesn't mean to say consciousness stops. That type of consciousness stops, yeah. So if we just get, you just sort of be open to it. But gee, if it's not the end, if something else takes place, what could it be? Well, the only thing is just going to be consciousness. Just like when you go to sleep at night, yeah, it all seems to stop. You wake up, it all starts up again. It's like that. Let's dedicate to our wonderful teachers, the Buddha in particular, and his lineage that taught us this material. So due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the Supreme Jewel, Bodhicitta, not yet born and rising God, may that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. And the recollection of the following Sri Dalai Lama, the wish granting, wish fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world. To the incomparably kind Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech. May all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And finally, for the swift appearance of Rinpoche. In holding and spreading the Buddha's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience that was never discouraged. Incomparable venerable gurus, to you to make this request.